This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
1-800-847-3993 or go to fair.org for more information. That's also where you can listen to Counterspin and subscribe to the Counterspin podcast. This show is engineered by Kelly Spivey and co-hosted by Peter Hart. I'm Steve Rendell. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
It's 6 o'clock and you are listening to KBOO. Stay tuned for Bread and Roses.
Do you have talents in fundraising, development, or new media? Are you an active KBOO member? Then here's your chance to bring your know-how to the KBOO Foundation Board of Directors. Applications are now being accepted for the 2013 election until midnight, June 28th. To apply, go to the kboo.fm homepage and click on KBOO Board of Directors Application.
If you are interested in country western music, tune in Saturday mornings from 6 to 9 a.m. for Swingin' Country on KBOO 90.7 in Portland, Oregon. That's Swingin' Country, 6 to 9 a.m. every Saturday morning.
Marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray. All touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.
Welcome, welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs. I'm your host, Della Ray, and our engineer laying it down in the booth is Chris. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That's 35 years, making it the longest-running feminist radio show in the country. This airspace is here to be shared. This collective is open to new members, and if you are a woman in body or spirit, we will certainly help train and support you. Perhaps you want to be in front of the mic or you want to be behind the scenes. Please reach out to our KBOO volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website at kboo.fm/breadandroses or on Facebook, KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. So I want to share something with you. I thought long and hard about tonight's show simply because this topic that we will be discussing tonight is about words. Words that we use and the gravity of them. And I believe my challenge this evening is going to be about keeping on topic with the word, not the issue that the word may represent. But before we dig in, I want to set the intention of this show. Here's what I believe. I believe in order to do well, we must first be well. I believe that taking the very best care of ourselves links to better everything. I advocate this message as an author, host of this show on Bread and Roses, and as a producer of lectures and fairs in the Portland area. All are in support of providing space to obtain information, education, and discussion around well-being. So if you want to know more about me and my thing and where I'm at, feel free to visit my website at www.delaray.net. Della is with two L's and R is R-A-E. So with that, I want to welcome Laura Weeking, owner and operator of WordBridge, to the show. Welcome, Laura. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So let's just jump right in. Tell us about you. Why are you here? What's up?
Sure. So I've been in communications and public relations for 15 years, and a lot of that time I spent at trade associations, and that's really where I became interested in authentic storytelling. helping organizations and companies tell their story beyond kind of the glossy, slick marketing copy. Because I feel like that's what really resonates with people is when you're authentic with them. And I've been a consultant for 3 years now. And so whether I'm talking about pears grown in the Northwest or Oregon's credit unions or a state program, what my passion is helping helping companies tell their stories by being mindful about the word choices they make.
Mm-hmm. So when we were talking about going on air and talking about words, you said word gravity. Tell me more about that.
Well, the idea of word gravity, I think I've always been aware of it, but the first time I heard the phrase was actually through meditation. Mm-hmm. How do you describe these experiences that you're having when there's not necessarily a context for them? So you're using words that may mean something completely different, but it's the best word you have to describe what's happening to you. So I began to realize how much weight words have. Mm-hmm. And over time, when words are used to describe charged issues, there's just a lot of gravity. It's hard for people to get away from what they think that word means.
Right.
So when you're trying to talk about using the same words in a different topic, how do you get away from the gravity of that word?
Sure. Well, I'm going to start off with something light. So as you know, I'm an advocate of wellness. And wellness can mean, what it means to me may mean something totally different to the people I'm talking to, because wellness can mean financial, physical, social, or mental health. And so what do you say about that?
So that's really about setting the stage, setting the context, and not assuming that your audience knows what you're talking about. Because if you're going out there talking about your passion about wellness, if you're not talking about what that passion is about, like what is it about wellness that you're passionate about, someone may be hearing it and get maybe a little turned off.
Right.
Because for them, wellness means something very different than what you mean it.
Right.
So you don't certainly mean to alienate someone, but unless you know where that person is coming from, they're not going to respond in the way you may want
right.
them to.
And even being inclusive is the same thing, trying mm-hmm. to get people to understand where you're coming from. That's awesome. So I want to, this is the moment of truth, I think, for this next word, these next words. I was reading an article from the AP, April 1st, 2013 issue, and it was talking about how the AP has banned the use of the term illegal immigrant. And apparently USA Today and the AP both banned that, while New York Times said, you know, we're just going to tweak it a little bit. So tell me more about that.
Sure. So the AP, the Associated Press, puts out a style book. It's kind of the source of truth for journalism. And it's all kinds of every word you could think of, how to use words properly. And they recently changed their guidance on how to use the term illegal immigrant. So essentially what they're saying is they no longer sanction the term or the use of the word illegal to describe a person. At the same time, they do admit that, you know, we often use the term illegal in reference to illegal loggers, illegal vendors. But the issue of immigration is so charged right now mm-hmm. that they're advocating that people start changing the terminology to use something different, because it can be offensive to some people. But at the same time, they're not necessarily providing the clear guidance of what journalists should use.
Right. So we're welcoming callers. 503-231-8187. And again, I just want to remind our listening audience that we're talking about the word itself, not the issue around the word. So what are some of the suggestions that are coming out instead of saying illegal immigrant?
Yes. Yeah, so,
or wait, let's back up. Okay. Why are they saying not to say illegal immigrant anymore?
They're saying it because using the term illegal to describe a person could be offensive, or
Well, I read something about it was describing an activity, not a person.
Right. So if you're going to use the word illegal, have it describe the activity. So illegal immigration mm-hmm. versus illegal immigrants.
Okay. So what are some of the recommendations that are being made around this then?
So this has been interesting to look into that, to see what they recommend. Some of them are a bit wordy, but we've got foreigners in the United States in violation of the law. Mm-hmm. USA Today uses unauthorized immigrants. There's also suggestions for saying immigrants living in the country illegally or a person who has crossed the border illegally or who has overstayed a visa. So they're a bit more wordy choices. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's some debate on whether or not illegal immigrant is the best term, because doesn't that describe what's happening? So this is a situation where the word choice is in flux in the middle of this national conversation about the topic. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of empathy for journalists who are writing about the topic or speaking about the topic, because it's in flux.
Right. So I have a definition here of political correctness. And of course, I got this off of the web, and it says, a term that refers to language, ideas, policies, and behavior aimed at minimizing alienation and discrimination against politically, socially, or economically disadvantaged groups. So isn't that in and of itself, you know, saying, so if you're saying disadvantaged groups, let's just kick that around for a minute. What's your thought on this actual definition of political correctness?
Well, it's, you know, I've noticed that it depends on which side of the issue you're on. If you want to incite, mm-hmm. you may use words that are really charged. Mm-hmm. And if you want to not alienate, you're going to soften your language a bit. And to me, with political correctness, you, as a listener, as a viewer, I'm kind of going, what do you really want to say?
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of dancing around the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously don't want to offend. You want to bring people in. You want to help them see your side. But and you end up not saying anything because
right.
you're so worried about offending.
So you know what? You just remind me of Abercrombie and Fitch, right? They said what they wanted to mm-hmm. say. And again, not falling on, we're not talking about the issue. We're just talking about the words they used. So talk about Abercrombie and Fitch and how they were able to say what they wanted to say.
Right. So there's an issue. They came out and said exactly what they felt about their brand and who should be wearing their clothes and who should be shopping in their stores. And they really got lambasted in the press.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was curious because as a consumer, I want to know where these companies stand.
Mm-hmm.
But then this company came out and said exactly what they felt, and everyone was really upset about it. But as a consumer, you know their position. You know exactly where they're coming from. Now, I think they went back and may have softened their language or made other statements about it. But when it first came out, it was really interesting because there is that kind of dichotomy of you don't like political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, then someone comes out and speaks out what they mean. And it's, well, that's wrong, too. So
right. Well, you know, as a result of the illegal immigrant, I went and was reading a lot of the feedback of what people were saying. It's like, okay, well, all this new innovative language might change bank robbery into undocumented withdrawal, kidnapping into movement of persons without prior approval. And this one I really like is cartels, undocumented pharmacists. You know, it's watering down the language.
Right. Yeah, and that's where, you know, you start getting into words losing their gravity and words losing their weight because you're not supposed to say certain words because there are groups out there and people who have a reason to be offended by that language, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's
right.
It's just as in the communications profession, it leaves you sometimes a bit in the air as far as how do we tell our story? How do we be truthful and honest with what we want to say but not alienate people?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And where do you think, so if you had to say where this is going as far as words and whatnot, do you think it's going to increase more about what can be said and what can't be said? Or what are your thoughts around that?
I feel like especially with social media on the rise and the internet and the fact that getting the microphone, so to speak, isn't as much of a challenge anymore for people who have what they have to say, what they want to say, that you don't have time to respond as quickly to a really hot issue. Sometimes companies have the expectation of they should be responding in an hour
mm-hmm.
or minutes mm-hmm. if an issue comes out. That doesn't leave a lot of time for massaging the message or we need to do some research on who are we talking to. So as the feedback and the time to respond gets shorter, I feel like we're going to start getting a little more honest
right.
because people have their say, they want to say it, They don't want to listen to the really airbrushed copy that a company has to say in response to something. They really want the truth because they're speaking the truth themselves.
Right. Well, there's some words that we were talking about, and one of them you called a stunt word, and it's called, and it's YOLO.
Right. So stunt words, they're kind of words that are created to produce an effect from someone. And YOLO is one of those I've been watching, especially on social media. It means you only live once.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of term that for me is, I'm always curious to see if corporate America tries to latch onto it and start using it. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, well, it's really taken out of context.
Right.
Because in the world of, you know, younger folks and the way they're using it, and if you see a company start saying, YOLO, let's get this product out, it's really going to be bizarre.
Right.
But it does happen. You start seeing Twitterati is a word I've seen.
What does that mean? I've never heard that.
So the folks who are really high up in Twitter, they're the echelon of Twitter.
Twitterati?
Twitterati.
Okay.
Yep. McJob.
McJob?
Blogosphere. Those are all words that kind of get created to kind of talk about a new situation or an environment that people are in.
Wow. Well, one of the words that I think that is amazing you talk about used out of context, and let's talk about some of these words that meant one thing a while ago and now they mean something totally different. And the word gay, mm-hmm. you know, what it used to mean and what it means now.
Sure. So gay is a word that's had generations of change.
Mm-hmm.
The original meaning was kind of carefree, joyful, lightheartedness. And then in about the mid-19th century is when you started seeing it change to having more of an association with sexuality in both men and women. And then in the 20s and 30s, you started seeing a little more weight around the word being used as a self-selected term by gay men. And then by the mid-50s was really when it started becoming publicly known to describe men who were gay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's word history is kind of fascinating. There's just seeing how words change over time and how different groups might co-opt a word to describe themselves, and then they can turn around and choose a different label for themselves.
Okay, well, it sounds like we have a caller.
Yes, good evening, ladies, and my name is Marie. Can you hear me all right?
Hi, Marie. Thank you for calling in. We can hear you just fine.
You're welcome. This is a wonderful topic. I'm grateful that KBOO's addressing this in defense of our agricultural workers. And I have an idea for what names we could say instead of illegal immigrants. But quickly before that, I was able to live a year in Mexico as an exchange student. And so I was able to see how kind and extremely hospitable the people were to me as an American, young American student, and how really sweet and tender they were. And then it really was breaking my heart to realize how they were treated when they came to the United States, when I saw the old, lovely Hispanic culture, the gracious culture versus the harsh reality of the agricultural life. So the idea that I had for a name would be something like American Wage Slave Agricultural food processors. They're actually processing our food. They're harvesting our food, or maybe it'd be agricultural food harvesters. But the truth is many of them truly are wage slaves. So I was thinking in anthropological terms, what would an anthropologist call them? They are really our food harvesters, and yet they are also wage slaves. So I'm kind of speaking out in defense of these poor people, and hopefully that was helpful.
It was, and you know what I mostly appreciate? You did stay on topic to talk about words, so we appreciate that. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
And so we have another.
Sure, and so along those lines, when you're talking about words that are around a politicized issue, you definitely don't want to dehumanize anyone, and that's another area of being mindful, is be mindful how the word may come across to the person that it's being described to.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Okay. So I want to talk about one more word before we go to break. And this is a word that is everybody uses today, and it's epic. Everywhere you look, everything's epic fail, epic this, epic that.
Right. So that's another word. The original meaning's been a bit lost to pop culture. And, you know, there's actually a term for that. It's called semantic satiation, for those of you who are in love with words. Means it's just reached a point where it just means something different. And epic originally meant heroic, majestic, epic journeys, epic poems, epic events. And now it's kind of like cool, exciting. So It's interesting to see the evolution of that word too.
Well, one word that bugs me so much is, especially as it relates to women, is empowerment. Women's empowerment, empowerment, empowerment. And the reason why that bugs me so much, because to me, I hear it as something's lacking to begin with. And it's saying that we need to go somewhere else to get it. And so that word just, it just never sits right with me as it's a shaky word. But then when it comes down to women, I'm thinking, yeah, there's got to be something else we can say.
Right. And it's also been used, it's one of those words that's actually lost its gravity because It's overused. And the motivational circuits really, you know, latched onto empower.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was reading about a woman who, you know, she felt very strongly about the program she was putting together because she felt it empowered people. And she didn't realize that when her audience was hearing the word empower, they were just getting kind of turned off.
Right.
Because it's such a poppy kind of buzz word.
Yes.
So she was like, oh, but I really feel like it empowers people. So that's where you as a business person or a leader, you need to kind of realize that you may feel very passionate about how you're describing your thing, but your audience may be like, I'm so over that. That doesn't catch my attention at all.
Right. You know, we have a caller. Let's go ahead and take that. Hello.
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 Yes. My name is Joe, and I have a question about the use of words.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. As you know, in the last couple of weeks, Paul and Dean have gotten in a lot of trouble using certain words of the past, and now we're calling her on it. I was thinking when I was listening to your discourse that if I use the term illegal immigrant most of my life, well, one day will I be labeled an enemy of the people? Mm. In other words, does one have to be always careful of what they say 24 hours a day for their entire life, knowing that maybe one day it's going to end up backfiring on you? You see what I mean?
Yeah, so I think that goes back to the meaning of the word in the moment in time. The words that she used always had a derogatory flavor to them. So if, you know, but today if we're using illegal immigrant and down the road, we look back and that was really, you know, a pejorative term. It was, it changed into something else. In the moment we were using it, it wasn't taken in that context.
Yes, so. What I'm saying here is that if I used it for many years publicly, Maybe one day it will be used against me in not getting employment or being eliminated from running for office.
You know, and I understand your question, and I think today we're just really just talking about the words, and I think what you bring up is something to think about as we talk about words and their meaning and what they pose and the gravity of them. That's the name of the show. So you're bringing up, I think, a really great question. And, you know, we're here just to talk about the gravity of the words, and I think, again, you're bringing up a really good point. That's something for us to think about.
Thank you.
And I think also young people today who have aspirations for politics are probably much more aware of this exact issue. They know that the internet stores everything. They know that every word has been archived somewhere. Mm-hmm. So my guess is that future generations of politicians or folks who want to be in the public eye may have in their youth been more aware of the words that they were using.
Okay. Joe, we hope that you got something that you out of our discussion here, and we thank you for calling. So, you know what I want to do? Let's go to break. We'll be right back.
I come out when the sun goes down. Yeah, that's when I come around, moving in the shadows. And if you see me, be warned, keep your fears, your toes, your kids and your animals away from me. Just leave me alone and we'll be okay. I'm in the city, yes, and this metropolis is where I'll stay. I'm under the porch, I'm out in the yard, I'm stopping your car and staring you down in your driveway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
even if that meant being mean, digging in and ruining my assailant's health. How can you be huffy by the job that I did on your dog's face when she was off the leash, showing her teeth, approaching me at a rapid pace? I'm curious as to why you people find me so offensive. Get to know me, you'll see. No, I'm really not that sensitive. Do you despise me because I seem so cute? Loathe me because I look so cuddly? Fear me because I'm a furry woodland creature that don't want to be your buddy?
And I just don't see.
Back. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Della Ray, and I just played Something for You by Kiwi Karen Searcy, and it's off her album called For the Fauna. And you talk about words. I'm not sure if you really got a chance to hear the words of that song, but that song was out about a raccoon, actually. And Karen, on her CD, does an amazing job telling stories about animals and insects. So I just wanted to share that with you. It's one of my favorites. So when we left for break, we had a caller, Joe, who was talking about, and I think he just really captured what I was hoping that would come out tonight, was about these words and we use them. What does it mean? And of course, we don't really have any answers, but it's just really good to look at the words and what it can mean now, what they used to mean, and what they could possibly mean in the future. So with that, I want to go to a word that's being used today that is just, when it first started being used, it was brilliant, I thought, and it's visionary. And Steve Jobs was, you know, he just owned the word visionary.
Yeah, so I find that another really interesting word. You know, originally it had a lot of supernatural and kind of religious aspects to it. A visionary was someone who was a seer or a prophet, mm-hmm. often had hallucinations mm-hmm. as to what they felt was going to come to pass. It also means someone who has unusual foresight. Definitely describes Steve Jobs. So today, leaders are hailed for their ability to be a visionary. With the way that technology is moving so quickly and business is evolving and our society moves fast, to be a visionary is something that is to be proud of. But if you substituted he's a visionary with he's having hallucinations about our next product,
right,
the conversation might sound kind of different.
Right. Yeah. And I love that. And I remember reading something just exactly that. And it's an amazing way to think about how we use words. And you said a word earlier, and you said it meant something different in the 1700s. And I'm not sure if we're taking a step back or not.
Right. So with the topic of the illegal immigrant, so the government actually doesn't, in their official documentation, doesn't necessarily use the term illegal immigration. They use the word alien, which is an even more today, a more
charged word.
It's a very charged word. And right. that was used in the 1700s when our country was being founded.
Right.
So that's just an example of how some words just get embedded into the fabric of the legal system.
Nice. So that just, I mean, again, I didn't mean to take us back so far, but it was just a really important point, I thought, just talking about, you know, how long the word's been around. Because in my mind, I think about alien as it relates to science fiction.
Right.
And I think about it's a word of my generation,
mm-hmm.
you know, right?
Yeah.
So do you have any other word examples that we were talking about?
I do. Especially just in business speak, there's so many words that get overused, and you know, sometimes they'll trickle out into pop culture. But words like leverage,
mm-hmm.
we're going to leverage that, and it's really about, you know, using power, giving someone the ability to act and influence. So today, it's just kind of something that means something that might benefit something else. Collaboration,
mm-hmm.
collaboration. Originally, it means like a voluntary coming together, but oftentimes in business, you have collaboration put upon you.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean to the word now?
Right.
ROI, return on investment, mm-hmm. was really a financial term, and now it's kind of anything you're going to get out of something. What's my return? What am I going to get out of the time I put into this?
Right. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Della Ray, and we are certainly welcoming callers to this discussion about the gravity of words. Feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187. So we are just, I want to back us up and talk a little bit more about leverage. Because when I think about leverage, you know, I always think of like a pulley. You know, I don't really think about it being an action word.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's, again, where are you coming from versus mm-hmm. where am I coming from when I use the word? Mm-hmm. And when it's used, if it's, for example, in a business, if it's being used among the executive team, does it mean the same thing to the frontline workers? Do they understand what the leverage is about, like what the action's
okay.
going to be about?
Unwrap that. Give us an example. What do you mean when you say that?
I feel like at times there are things that happen in the higher offices that don't trickle down in the same way mm-hmm. that the original meaning was with the conversation. So when it kind of goes down through different layers of management, the frontline worker may look at something completely different. They're looking at it in the context of the task they have to do every day.
Right.
They may not necessarily have it tied to the bigger strategy of the company.
Okay. And I don't want to get into tactics necessarily, but I do want to say, well, then that's more of a communication and how in doing a better job and explaining what it means and making sure everybody understands how that word's being used. And back to what you were saying earlier, not that assuming that everybody's on the same page about this word.
Right.
You know, would you mind if we talk about, you know, you see missions and, you know, company, their mission statements and their vision. You know, in your experience with your writing, tell me what all that means. What do those words really mean? You know, because you walk into a company and you see their vision on the wall and their mission. And I've, you know, being a nonprofit person, you know, how many missions have we been involved with carving out?
So mission and vision statements, it is interesting because you as a consumer or a person are just going to look at it and go, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But what's behind it is often hours and hours of really
yes.
deep discussion about why are we here? Why are we an organization? Why have we formed? What's our purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Who do we want to serve?
Mm-hmm.
What's the end result that we want to achieve?
Right.
Whether that's a nonprofit or a corporation or, you know, any group can
yeah.
have a mission and a vision statement. I've heard families have mission statements
right.
to help them really focus on what's important for them and how they present themselves to the world.
Well, you know what I find interesting about, I think this ties into what you were talking about when we were talking about leverage, how maybe upper management may know about what that word is. And if you have, and when you talk about a mission statement, perhaps the same upper management that sat in the room and spent hours and paid a consultant to come up with this mission, how well does the rest of the team understand what that mission really means? You're listening to KBOO, Bread and Roses, and we have a caller. Hello.
Hi. My name is Lauren, and I have a question. I know this may seem silly, but I was just wondering what you guys think about the term DGAF.
You know, I have to pass that over to Laura. Lauren, I've never heard. How do you say that?
DGAF.
D-I-G-A?
D-I-G-A-F.
I don't know what that is.
So this is a great example. Can you use it in a sentence for me?
Yeah, it's like, I'm DGAF, and it's kind of like YOLO. It's like, don't give a fuck.
Oh.
So it's an F on the end, not an S.
Right.
What'd you say?
Okay.
So that's just another, you know, with social media, you have very few characters sometimes to say what you want to say.
Uh-huh.
So these kind of acronym stunt words get used a lot in social media. So it's It's not one I've actually been familiar with, but it's mm-hmm. if it's used within its own community, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's when you use...
Well, I feel like a lot of upcoming marketing has used it, and it's been very efficient.
Where have you heard it in marketing?
I mean, just with clubs and things downtown, a lot of, trinket little things.
Oh, okay, because
the people that are using it are probably trying to speak to a very specific audience who gets that term. You may not sell that trinket to someone.
So we're not here to judge whether it's acceptable or not. We're just talking about words and the gravity of them. So if we were to say that was or wasn't acceptable, then we would, be going against the very thing that we're trying to get people to open up to, right?
That is true.
And so we really appreciate your call. Lauren, did you have any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in. All right. That was interesting. So did that age you at all?
A little bit. But again, it's, that's not necessarily my community.
Right.
So I don't even know about it.
Right.
If I saw it being sold, I don't know that it would appeal to me.
Right.
Because it has no gravity for me. It has no pull.
Right. And it would depend on where it was at and where you saw it. And, if it was written down, I won't even go there. So let's go on to another word that we were talking about earlier. And I think it was one of the words that came up was strategy.
Right. So strategy, it used to really imply that a lot of thought went into a particular decision or direction. What's the strategy? What's our thought behind this? It's not the tactics, not how we're going to do it. It's mm-hmm. it's the why. It's kind of the umbrella piece of it. And really, today it's just kind of more about, I think people confuse it with tactic. Or what are we going to do? What's our strategy? As in, how are we going to achieve that thing?
So strategy, though, when I think about that, so all your words, I like when I think about it, I always think of in sports. I think about it in sports and a playbook for strategy. So how do you, in writing and what you do, when do you use strategy?
So, and you're right, strategy also means foresight. Mm-hmm. So the planning that goes mm-hmm. into for sporting events. I really try to know who my audience is. So for trade associations, I knew that group had a pretty broad knowledge of the topic we're speaking about. So you could use more shorthand, or I could use terms in a slightly different context than I might use in a publicly distributed press release. So it's just about knowing who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm. So when would you use strategy? I mean, so would you use that? And I don't want to get into anything corporate or any examples, but and I'm not even sure if this is the right question, what age group? Or is it an age group, or is a strategy a product word? What kind of word is that?
For me, it's more of a planning word.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you're putting together a strategic plan, mm-hmm. you're mapping out strategies.
Mm-hmm.
For, let's say, a result for a certain communication campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's mapping out the steps that are going to be taken.
But how do you keep it all straight in terms of, so there's this word, there's that, there's this group, there, I mean, what would, I mean, do you, I mean, let me ask you this, do you go back to the AP and see what words are in and out before you write things?
I do. I also do research online, and mm-hmm. I look at how that topic's been written about,
mm-hmm.
what the conversation is, in what words are being used mm-hmm. in the conversation,
mm-hmm.
what words is the group I'm trying to reach using about themselves.
Right.
So it's really about, a lot about communications is listening.
Right.
In a way, it's before you just start rambling off, hey, consumer, here's what I'm going to tell you about this product. It's, who am I talking to? And what are their triggers, and what do they want to hear, and what turns them off, and how can I bring them in? And there's just so much, there's a wealth of information that's on the internet and in all kinds of forums and blogs and social media.
Yeah. So you're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland, and we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Cause if it's milk tastes good.
You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7. I'm your host, Della Ray. And again, I just played another song off of Karen Searcy's CD. It was track 10. And we were talking about words, and I just can't say enough on how Karen has taken words about animals and put them in with music and just has you listening to words in a different way, perhaps maybe through the eyes and minds of animals and instincts. And insects. I just messed up a word. All right. So we were welcoming callers. We're here with Laura Weeking, owner-operator of Word Bridge. And we were welcoming callers to join our conversation about words and the gravity of words. 503-231-8187. And before we left for break, Laura, we were talking about the word as they associate and the meaning of them. And we were saying how.
Sure. So, you know, when you use especially words in a lot of the business context, mm-hmm. They get a little watered down from mm-hmm. what they might mean when someone's talking about them at the outset.
Yeah. And so I think one of the words, and, you know, just in light of all the news and what's going on, same-sex marriage.
Right. So that's hot issue. It's how do we talk about this issue that's going on? Mm-hmm. What words do we use? And what I've been noticing is a lot of people go back and forth between same-sex marriage or gay marriage. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's about, well, what is the gay community using? What terms do they want to put around this issue that's so important to them? So as a communicator, I wouldn't want to decide for them how do they want to address that issue or label the issue.
Right. So, but how do we know, or how is it decided? And I know we talked about the AP, so it's up to the individual writer then to decide how they're going to deliver specific messages or how that message is going to be delivered.
So for formal publications, they tend to have a style guide of their own.
Right.
So the Associated Press puts out kind of the holy, you know, Bible
mm-hmm.
for journalists.
Right.
But each newspaper or news organization may have their own style guide. So USA Today has, their own. Mm-hmm. Wall Street Journal is going to have a style guide for theirs. And they may be different. Most mm-hmm. of them do base their guides on what the AP style book says.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the tone they want to use and how they want to reach out to their audiences, the Wall Street Journal is a very different publication than the USA Today when you're reading about the same issue.
Right, but okay, so enough of the corporate piece of it. What about you? What do you do? I mean, how do you decide? I know you said you go and you listen, but how do you decide what it is you're going to say when you're talking about charged things, or even, you know, like you were talking about when you're writing about fruit, how do you decide what words to use?
Well, for me, a lot of it's about finding the balance between what does the organization want to say and what does my audience want to hear?
Mm-hmm.
So I take a lot of input from both sides. Mm-hmm. I sit down with my client or my employer, mm-hmm. and we talk about the issue or the marketing piece or the blog post, whatever it's going to be. And so I know what their goal is. Mm-hmm. And then I do my research and mm-hmm. see what's out there, what's being said about the topic already, how mm-hmm. do I want to say it different, mm-hmm. how can I bring in this new interesting angle to get someone's attention, because mm-hmm. folks can get pretty jaded with the amount of media that's being mm-hmm. kind of thrown at them right now.
So I'm going to ask you to dig a little deeper. How do you personally, I mean, that you've done a great job, that's the corporate thing that you do, but how do you personally, do you follow your instincts? Because when you're writing for yourself and doing things for you, how do you figure out what to say and what to do?
A lot of it's instinct. Mm-hmm. I go with what sounds good, what pulls the story together, what would make me interested in reading about this.
What would make you interested? Aha, yeah. Uh-huh. That makes sense.
Right. So, and how I write personally can be quite different than how I write professionally.
Sure.
But that gap is closing, I'm noticing, as I've been working for myself, because I'm putting more of myself forward as a consultant.
Nice. We have a caller.
Hi there. My name is Megan.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Well, I kind of have a very sensitive word to talk about. I don't really know if, I mean, I'm actually part of the gay community myself.
Okay.
The word I want to talk about is fag.
Okay. Right.
The thing I should talk about with that word is how it actually meant something completely different. And I think that World War II is when that word changed into something to actually mean homosexual due to the fact that it was the burning of sticks, I believe.
Mm.
And I was actually calling mostly about if a lot of words have changed through global tragedy like that.
So events like that can definitely bring about a lot of change, because you tend to get a lot of people in close quarters during really charged times. And you also have mixed cultures kind of happening too. So some words start taking on meanings when you are with someone from another culture too. Because in England or the UK, I don't know how much it's used anymore, but fag used to mean cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
So
Megan, you are just bringing it right to the table. This is exactly what we're talking about, how words used to mean something different. Now they mean something else. And who knows what that word's going to mean, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And the way as fast as social media is moving, it could mean something different tomorrow, right?
I definitely agree. And it's also really interesting how the gay culture in and of itself has taken over the word.
Hmm.
Like, you can hold that in a lot of racial context.
Mm-hmm.
With that word, I find it very interesting, and it's actually completely different. I think the word isn't necessarily interchangeable in the lesbian community as it is with the gay community, and I find it interesting as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Megan, and sharing your thoughts with us.
No problem. Thank you. Bye.
So I'm going to go ahead and take the next caller.
This is Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. Thank you for calling. Welcome to Bread
You're
and
welcome.
Roses.
Thank you. I really enjoy listening to Bread and Roses when I can catch you. I called in because I noted your guest use an adverb in the current way it's used, they are used, and then I heard her correct herself in another, as she spoke it, used another adverb, another later on, a few minutes later. But I'm saying that I hear adverbs neglecting the ly. People do not use the ly in an adverb. And I have a very sharp ear. I mean, I hear all of it, you know, what it is and what it means mm-hmm. and nuances and whatnot.
Sure.
And this is something I've noticed in people speaking and writing. Now, I am of the generation where I was taught to properly use adverbs and corrected by my mother when I didn't use them properly. I think that this, I've furnished you with enough stuff, info to respond to, and I'm going to sign off and listen.
Well, Carolyn, can I ask you one quick question?
Sure.
Are you an educator? Are you a teacher?
Well, I've got teacher in my blood.
You've got teacher in your blood.
My mother at 91... is still writing. She taught middle school in Modesto.
Okay.
California, and currently lives in Sacramento. As a poet of note, I mean, you know, there's a proud daughter coming forth.
Gotcha.
At the same time, my ear is very sharp, and I do write. I have was a legal secretary for 15 years, and dealt with pleadings and correspondence. Now I'm a home care worker. I'm a member of SEIU Local 99, and because of my background, I am a serious contributor to whatever I get involved in.
Yeah.
Because my mind is, you know, and I'm not afraid to say, hey, look, this is the way it needs to be because, and then, you know, pursue it.
Yes. And, Carolyn, we really appreciate you calling in. This is great, and we want to hear more and get to other callers. So we really, again, appreciate you calling in and expressing yourself about the use of words, and we hope you have a wonderful evening.
I'm just coming home from my work, my second day's client, and so it's all cool.
Okay. Thank you, Carolyn. Yeah. Enjoy. You are listening to KBOO Bread and Roses on 90.7. We are here having a really great discussion about words and how we use words. Joining us is Laura Weeking, owner-operator of WordBridge. So I think we kind of skipped over you and your thing with words. I know you said that you really want to hear more authentic stories, but tell me more about your thing with words. Carolyn just reminded me that we missed that piece.
Right. And it also reminded me how different it can be speaking live on the radio versus writing.
Right.
And I do a lot of my communications through writing. Mm-hmm. So this isn't necessarily my natural setting as far as a communicator. And I think that's very typical for a lot of people is they have one type of communications that they're more familiar with or comfortable with. And for me, I love typing. I just love seeing words come together into a great flowing sentence and into a great paragraph. And then it comes together in a story that really has impact. So that's with words. I'm a huge reader. Mm-hmm. I love good writing to read it myself.
Right.
And that really inspired me, you know, to go into communications is my love of receiving the word.
Yeah. So what is it like for you speaking live now then? What's that like?
It's a bit more nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. I have to say I have a lot of empathy for people who do radio and live television because you can't stop and think necessarily about is this the right word choice? And you know, sometimes it just starts going. So for me it's a pretty fast medium.
Yes. I was listening to a KBOO interview this morning. Don Merrill was being interviewed, I want to say. I hope I'm getting this right. And this is a perfect example. When you're here live talking, and every time I've yet to have an interview where I don't go back, go, man, what made me say that? But it's having compassion. And I think this ties in with our subject. It's having compassion for ourselves and for other people because we have all said things that we wish we hadn't. And being live here, you know, you always think of something brilliant when the mic goes off. So I appreciate your comment on that and your thoughts around that. So tell me about the word aging. We were talking about that word when we were preparing for this interview.
Yeah, the word aging and the whole topic of aging has a lot of, and also another issue that has a lot of charge around it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely an evolving conversation because the words have changed. The words that aging people use are changing.
Mm.
For example, elder.
Mm-hmm.
What did elder used to mean versus what it means now? So just even that piece of the conversation and people who are older, do they want to be called elders?
Mm-hmm.
Because as anyone who's younger might say, I'm calling you an elder because I respect you.
Right.
I appreciate your wisdom.
Right.
But the person who's older might say, well, you're just calling me old.
Right. But do you think about, and see, my experience with that word elder means respect. It means someone who does have wisdom. It means something amazing. And I think of a brilliant person when I think of elder. And so now you say elderly.
Right. There you add that L-Y. And the meaning of it changes so much because elderly, you hear it and you think someone who is physically frail. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really have anything to do with their mental state. Mm-hmm. So, and I was doing some research on that about the different cultures, what elder means to different cultures, how it's used here, how it's used among the aging population, because aging is relative.
Right. It is, isn't it?
You can be 60 and your elder is 80.
Yes.
But for someone who's 20, they may not see the distinction.
Right. Well, you talk about the word relative. If my sister is listening, that's her least favorite word, relative. She goes, oh, everybody says everything's all relative. And she gets all up in arms about that word. So let's talk about really quick deliberate word choices.
Right. So let's use the topic of aging with that. When you are mindful about the words that you're using, you can change the tone of a conversation.
Sure.
If you're in a setting where the word elderly is being thrown around in a not great way, and you want to change the tone, if you start using elder, and again, this is my choice. Like, this may not be the choice that group wants, but just in this example, you can start bringing in the gravity of the word elder. And most people do understand that it means, you know, that wise older person in the community.
Right.
And wouldn't that be great to be able to change the conversation? We have it, you know, our population is aging, and they're a very important group to us. So we can set the tone for this conversation that's going to become more and more prevalent by setting the stage with really thoughtful word choice.
And speaking of which, you laid a quote on me that I will never forget. What is it?
So this is one of my favorite quotes. It says, stories are the single most powerful weapon in a leader's arsenal. So for me, that's really about the words we choose impact how our story will be received.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we're just winding down in the last few minutes. Laura, if you could leave our listeners with one last thought, something that you want them, besides that amazing quote, what would it be?
I would say that just know that your words have weight. Mm-hmm. You know, language isn't static and it evolves.
Yes.
So just know that what you're using today may mean something very different in the future. But if you are speaking from an authentic place and you're mindful about what you're saying, then your story can really come across with a lot of power.
Yeah, absolutely. My friend Renee Mitchell says, words have power. Use them wisely. All right. I think it's time to start wrapping this baby up. Our collective, Bread and Roses, brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. And women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That's 35 years. This airspace is here to be shared. Laura was just here sharing the space for the first time. And if you would like to jump in and get involved, please reach out to KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. I want to thank our guest, Laura Weeking, and our amazing engineer, Chris. You brought it. You brought it. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our callers, and I hope I don't miss anyone. Marie, Joe, Lauren, Megan, and Carolyn, thank you, because I know it takes time and energy and nerve to call in. And I want to leave you with this. People, dear listener, now is the time to take the very best care of ourselves, all of the time, and everywhere we go. No exceptions. Thank you for joining us, and be well.
Marching. At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. It is 6:59 right now. We are getting out of the Bread and Roses Hour and going into Heart Knock Radio, news, views, and hip hop. So stay tuned.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lilith's Albina Park in North Portland with music, and Cable will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at KBOO.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Station Navigator Report, June 25th, 2013. This weekend, June 28th and 29th, KBOO is participating in the Good in the Hood event, Keeping Unity in the Community. The event is at Lilith's Albina Park, located on North Flint and Russell Streets. KBOO will be in the parade on Saturday, serving birthday cake at our booth, and we will also be broadcasting from the entertainment stage Saturday from 2 to 7 p.m. Please listen in or drop by the festivities. On Sunday, June 29th, be